From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Of course, Holy Week coming up next week, and a wonderful event it's becoming a huge event here in the Diocese of Sacramento on Holy Saturday, which is the final day of March, March 31st. The Diocese of Sacramento, and this is a letter from Bishop Soto, who will be leading this wonderful pilgrimage, a fifth annual pilgrimage. The Diocese of Sacramento, in collaboration with Radio Santissimo Sacramento, is organizing the fifth annual pilgrimage to seven parishes within the city of Sacramento, Holy Saturday, March 31st at 7 a.m. Yeah, it's an early start. Get that coffee pot perking early. The pilgrimage will start at St. Elizabeth Church and continue to the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, St. Francis Church, Sacred Heart, Immaculate Conception, and the Sacramento Food Bank Center, and then concludes at the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe at 711T, the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. This beautiful Hispanic tradition was adopted some years ago during the observance of the Year of Faith. It offers the faithful an opportunity to prepare their hearts for the Easter Vigil and Easter Sunday. It has grown over all these years. There were over 1,200 participants last year, and they anticipate even more participants this year. A plenary indulgence will be associated with participation in the pilgrimage, along with a requisite confession, Holy Communion, and prayers for the intentions of the Holy Father. The pilgrimage will be conducted bilingually, but primarily in Spanish, and a special invitation is extended to youth and young adults. For more information, contact Lorena Alberon, who is the general manager of Radio Santissimo Sacramento, at 916-442-7389. It's a wonderful event, and it's so heartening to see. I'm sure people are driving down the street, walking down the street, out for a morning jog, and they see all these people in pilgrimage. And you know, if you can't make all of it, try to make some of it. You can find the order and maybe you can make part of it. That would be fine. You're supposed to dress comfortably, you know, respectfully. You're going to all these wonderful churches, but by the same token, you know, dress for the weather. You know, it could be chilly, could be raining, could be whatever, but dress for those. It'll definitely be chilly at 7 in the morning. So dress for that, and also wear comfortable shoes, because you're going to be doing a fair amount of walking. So, but it is a wonderful, wonderful event here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Just quickly let you know, the Valley of the Sacred Heart Academy in Dixon will hold its annual wine tasting event April the 14th. Just circle the date here. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. at the St. Mary's Parish Hall. It will be in Vacaville, even though the Academy is in Dixon. St. Mary's Parish Hall in Vacaville. Food, wine tasting, beer, silent auction, and more. The guest speaker will be Father Sean Sheridan, president of Franciscan University of Steubenville. You're invited to come and support Valley of Sacred Heart Academy and share in their exciting undertaking of opening a Catholic Chesterton High School and Montessori Elementary School. Tickets are available at the Dixon Florist, which is right by St. Peter's Parish there in Dixon, or at the St. Peter's Parish office. You can also call 530-574-0804 to reserve your tickets. Tickets for one are $40, for two are $70. So for more information about the event and about Valley of the Sacred Heart Academy, contact. You can go to online to valleyofthesacredheart.com. Catholic Advocacy Day is coming up April the 24th, and you can go to the website for the California Legislative Network, the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California in the California legislature, and they have selected a number of bills for Catholic Advocacy Day at the California State Capitol. Again, it will take place Tuesday, April the 24th. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bills that they are going to be discussing. So go to cacatholic.org to learn all about those and how you can participate in Catholic Advocacy Day, April 24. Well, we're pleased to, as we near the end of the 40 Days for Life campaigns, to go to the great city of Napa, and we're joined by Howard Haupt of 40 Days for Life in Napa. Howard, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing very good. How are things in Napa?
Well, they're wet.
They're wet.
As they have been for the last several weeks, but we're still carrying the torch. This is the 36th day of our 20th campaign, Gabe, and it's been a good one. Damp, but good.
Very good. Very good. And, yeah, well, you need water to make all those grapes grow.
That's true. That's true. We all need that that water to fill up our reservoirs, because come summer we won't see it again.
That's right.
But, you know, despite that rain, our very faithful, we call them prayer warriors or vigiliers. That's another one. Who take about an hour apiece each day between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. You know, in public witness and prayer, mainly in front of the local Planned Parenthood clinic here. And they've been very reliable, and it's a real joy to be out there.
Very good. Tell us, what are your biggest challenges there?
Well, you know, strangely enough, it's sometimes finding the people on the weekends to cover our hours, because, you know, that's oftentimes family time, running errands and so forth. But we've got a system of calling up substitutes, and they'll come out there and cover the area for in prayer for those particular hours. Another one may be that there's been some increased opposition or harassment by the local escorts for Planned Parenthood. I think that I suspect this may be coming from the top, because Planned Parenthood is really under the gun nationwide in many areas, legal, financial, and so forth. So they've been voicing their opposition to us even being there. But that's all part of the package, and nothing really new, but just somewhat increased this year.
Very good, very good. Have you had any special things you could tell us about that have happened at the on the sidewalk?
Well, every day it seems there's someone who stops by to ask, you know, our reasons for being there, and oftentimes it's street people who they really just want someone to talk to. But more often than not, people will stop by who are just, you know, passersby. And we're able to share with them our purpose, you know, and that is the end of abortion in not just the United States, but in the world now. And they see our signs and sometimes take our literature, sometimes not. But I experienced something just the other day. A young lady, Hispanic, who was all smiles. She was not a passerby, but someone had invited her to come down and pray with us, and she was just delighted to be there when she realized the purpose. And she stayed an hour and prayed with us, and was once again shaking hands and all smiles when she left. And, you know, that sort of pumps you up, gives you the energy and the confidence to carry on during the rainy days.
Very, very, very good. So have you already started working on 40 Days for Life for the fall campaign?
Well, we know when it's going to be. It's 6 months away. Normally starts one of the last days of September and finishes the first week in November. But, yes, we have our team intact, and we'll probably do it much the same way. There's no magic to this. It's it's persistence and trying to carry that message out there, to the public and to the world. We'll have, once again, many of the same people who are responsible each as captains for 1 hour, and then they provide a backup. Oftentimes it's a couple, husband, wife, and they're reliable, and they're sort of the backbone of the whole operation here. The people out there, in public, praying and giving witness to their faith.
Oh, that's wonderful, Howard. Is it primarily a Catholic movement, or is it?
It's become more so. Disappointingly so, because the local churches haven't really joined in. It's a different demographic here too, Gabe, than you'd find, say, over in Vacaville, for instance. The demographic in Napa, although highly Hispanic, it's the politics are a little different, and therefore the response has been mainly Catholic. I'd say over the past 5 years, in particularly.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Well, Howard, keep up the good work there, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the fall.
Okay, sounds good, Gabe.
Hey, God bless. Take care. That's Howard Haupt from the 40 Days for Life in Napa. We really like going around the country, going around Northern California even, and finding out about all the 40 Days for Life and all the great work they've been doing. The number of says in the history of 40 Days for Life has just been phenomenal. Now, the Joy of the Gospel Social Ministry Specialization Series, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different sessions. All classes will be on Saturdays in the spring. All will run from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and they'll all be at St. Anthony's Parish Hall. That's 660 Florin Road, St. Anthony Parish Hall, right here in the pocket area of Sacramento. Social Ministry Specialization Series will give a foundational understanding of Catholic social teaching, help you to build a parish community where social ministry is integral, not optional, where it is the work of every believer, not just the mission of a few committed people and committees. The series is designed for Respect Life and Social Justice ministers, catechists, Catholic school teachers, master catechists, lay ministry formation grads, and Catholics seeking to better understand their faith. It's available for everyone. Renewal certification credit is available. For questions or comments, contact Laura Lynn Solano. She's at 916-733-0153 or L Solano, S-O-L-A-N-O, L Solano, S-O-L-A-N-O, at scd.org. The first session will be Saturday, April the 7th, first Saturday after Easter, Biblical Foundations for Justice. Saturday, April 14th, Catholic Social Teaching 101. Saturday, April 28th, on the development of a social theology. Saturday, May 5th, Part 1, Developing Communities of Salt and Life. Part 2, Restorative Justice. And then Saturday, May the 12th, Part 1, Gospel of Life. Part 2, Faith in the Public Square. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back. We'll be talking with Marie Leatherby, who is in Washington, D.C. for the hearing before the U.S. Supreme Court Tuesday about, these were the oral arguments, about this California law, this onerous California law requiring so-called crisis pregnancy centers, life centers, including the Sacramento Life Centers, to inform their clients that they may be available to get a free or low-cost abortion, and giving phone numbers, et cetera. It's compelled speech, in my estimation. If you left the argument about that this, the issue here was abortion, it would be a 9-0 slam dunk decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, and virtually every American would say you can't force people. We have freedom of speech in this country, and that implies freedom not to speak, too, to compel somebody to put out a message about something that they is diametrically opposed to what they stand for, the complete opposite message of what they stand for, to take a pro-lifer and say, because you're pro-life, you have to, in fairness, put out a pro-abortion message and tell people where they can get an abortion, is absolutely crazy. They're not requiring Planned Parenthood to tell their clients, oh, if you want to consider keeping the baby and not getting an abortion, well, maybe here's a phone number of the Sacramento Life Center. They're not requiring Planned Parenthood to do that. So it's really crazy. But they had oral arguments yesterday in the U.S. Supreme Court, and Maria will tell us all about it. But I'll just give you a little hint. The questions that the justices asked, they don't vote yet, and they don't release the results of their vote generally until June, late June. But the questions that the justices were asking would indicate that they were very skeptical about this California law. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California in the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights.
Hello, this is Mark Ross from the Diocese of Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry. This is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks for all you do here for the Black Catholic Ministry in the Diocese of Sacramento. The Diocese of Sacramento's Office of Vocations invites K through 12 students to participate in the 2018 Vocations Essay Contest. There are two divisions, K through 8 and high school. The question that you're asked to answer or to write about your essay, tell us how your relationship with a priest, sister, seminarian, or deacon has enriched your life as a Catholic. You can enter by mail. Send it to Reverend Jovito Rata. That's J-O-V-I-T-O, and the last name is Rata, R-A-T-A, who is the Director of Vocations, and he's at 2110 Broadway here in Sacramento, 95818. If you have any questions on this, contact Maricela Smith, msmith@scd.org, or give her a call, 916-733-0260. The Collar Cup itself, the priest versus seminarians, the second annual soccer match. The seminarians won the first one last year, 1-0, on a very hot day in the summer. This one will take place on Saturday, June the 23rd at Papa Murphy Stadium, right there next to Cal Expo. 4 p.m. Vigil Mass with Bishop Soto. What a wonderful opportunity to witness Mass in the bleachers, if you will, at Papa Murphy Stadium. It's a different venue, but it is still Holy Mass and with Bishop Soto. 5:15 p.m., the Collar Cup match. 6 p.m., the Vocations Fair opens. And then you can stay and watch the Sacramento Republic, the pros, play soccer at 8 p.m. Go to collarcup.com to get all the details. Also, if you'd like your school to have Sacramento Republic pro soccer players visit your school, you can call Maricela Smith at 916-733-0260 to register your school and plan a visit. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Marie Leatherby, the director, executive director of the Sacramento Life Center. Marie, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a beautiful blizzardy day here in Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, I've been reading about, I know you went back for the Supreme Court oral arguments. Tell us,
yes.
But before we talk about that, explain, mm-hmm. just give us some of the logistics. Who gets in? How do you get in? How many people, you know, from the public, just the general public, get to hear oral arguments?
Well, not very many.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, we got here late Saturday night, and we were staying near the Supreme Courthouse. And by Sunday afternoon, placeholders, people pay placeholders to stand in line for important cases.
Wow. They're actually, that's an occupation now, placeholder.
It's an occupation.
Wow.
Yes, and they get paid like $40 an hour.
Whoa, wait a minute. I'll be there.
I know. We thought, well, when we retire, we can just sit here and sit all day in front of us.
Bring your rosary, bring your newspaper.
Yeah.
It
was amazing. And so there were, most of those were young kids, and they bring sleeping bags and plastic, and it no matter how cold, they are there. We're there until, you know, Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock from Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
And there was at least 27 people in line. Only 50 to 60 get in.
Uh-huh.
And so we decided Sunday morning, we went back over Monday and decided Monday we better get in line if we wanted to hear the arguments.
Uh-huh.
And it was supposed to rain. So we were like numbers 33, 34, and 35,
uh-huh.
three of us. And we ran to Walmart and got chairs and tarps and blankets because we knew it was going to be a icy rain all night.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't know if we'd make it. We're like, we're going to try. If it gets too cold, we're out of here. But we hung in there. And through a miserable night, we were freezing. But we had, coats and blankets and stuff to keep us dry. And we made it through. And we're so tired. By 7 o'clock, they were giving us our tickets.
Uh-huh.
And nobody wants to cut in that line, I can tell you. You would be murdered.
I don't believe in justifiable homicide, but that might have been one of the cases. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's. Obviously, if you were, I know, I mean, you're sort of one of the plaintiffs, if you will, but other than the actual party to the lawsuit, presumably they don't have to wait in line.
No, there were two pregnancy centers named in the lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
and then the 100 other of us, you know, we're like on our own. They only let in the attorneys and the two representatives of those centers. One was a licensed medical clinic, one a non-licensed.
Okay.
So
you take your seat.
Uh-huh.
How far are you from the justices?
Oh, there were probably 15 rows of seats, and we get public, we get the back rows.
Mm-hmm.
And, so not that far. I mean, we could see them, and, you know, it's not that big of a room.
So what time do they actually let you into the building?
Well, because it was so cold, they let us in. The courthouse wasn't even open. They let us in about 8:30.
Uh-huh.
And I think they just took pity on us in the weather. And then we got to go up into the courthouse at 9 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And then the session starts at what, 10?
10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you today we went by and there was not one person in line for a case. So we knew our case must have been very important because it was, you know, a free speech case. There was huge rallies and people from both sides, even in the, you know, rainy weather. And people lined up to get in that never ended up being able to get in. But it was quite an experience.
Yeah, you know, there obviously have been a number of free speech cases over the history of our country. And just last week during the quote unquote student walkouts protesting gun violence and some having memorials for the kids who were killed in Florida and some of their teachers, we heard people on both sides talking about free speech. Well, do they have free speech? Do they have free speech in school, time, place, manner? And people citing various Supreme Court cases, the Tinker case and this and that. And but this is a different one. And I cannot recall one where we're dealing with not whether or not somebody had the right to say something, but whether the government could compel somebody to say something they didn't want to say.
This was just different.
It's a different case, and it's one that, and I've contended all along, and I'm sure you agree, that if we were not talking about abortion, if we were talking about something else, everyone would agree that the First Amendment would prevent the government from forcing you to say something you didn't want to say, even if it was kind of relatively neutral. But this is something that is the exact opposite of what you stand for, what your mission is, what your belief system is. And I've said many, many times, the government says, well, the government being the state of California in this case, is saying that, well, this is a public health issue. Well, you could say the same thing saying that, McDonald's has to tell you where there's a Burger King in case you'd rather have a Whopper than a Big Mac. And it's about public health because it has to do with nutrition, and it has to do with eating and health. Mm-hmm. And so the state has a right to compel you to force them to give the phone number and address of their competitor and maybe even publish their menu. And everybody would say, well, that's laughable. And it is laughable.
And the other thing the judges pointed out in that case, but it wasn't even a law for everybody. It was targeted for 60 pro-life pregnancy clinics.
Right. And the case itself is called the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates versus Becerra. And Becerra is the Attorney General of California. And generally, the way this works, if a state passes a law and then someone brings suit against that law, it's up to the Attorney General of the state to defend the law as the Attorney General of that state. And sometimes you'll find Attorney Generals in a position where maybe they don't want to defend the law, but they're sort of supposed to because that's their job. They represent the state. Now, I've read extensively, but I'll let you tell the story. And the notion that you don't know what happened. Oral arguments, and some legal experts will tell you, oral arguments are kind of window dressing. That the justices, they get all the briefs, and they've got wonderfully talented staffs. Every single justice does, the clerks. And they do all the research and precedent and what case maybe is this similar to, et cetera. And then that's really the more persuasive is the briefs. And, of course, they will argue among themselves. They'll go back into their inner sanctum and argue among themselves, probably not even with their robes on. They're wearing regular street clothes at that point. And they'll make a decision. But the amazing thing is, with all the leaks there are in government, they may make a decision in April, but it doesn't leak out until it's formally announced in June. I can't recall a single time where the decision.
Yeah, unless it's unanimous, I think.
Yeah.
It comes out later.
Yeah, and so people tend to read the tea leaves in oral arguments because they know the oral arguments will be reported right away in the press. Not a leak.
They already are.
It's absolutely. That's public information.
And they're fascinating. I would think everybody should go on and read these oral arguments.
And I would, one that I would recommend for people, although there's a million different people putting them out, Amy Howe, who is a reporter at the SCOTUSblog.com. SCOTUS is Supreme Court of the United States. SCOTUSblog.com. She, to me, she straight down the middle and just reports what each justice said. Gives some analysis though of what, you know, the background and what it might mean. And everything I went to a number of sites, and everything I could find is it's nothing but good news.
It's nothing but good. Yes, we are elated with how it went. I mean, I couldn't have imagined it going any better. I mean, even the pro-choice, you know, Sotomayor, and they were for us. They thought it was overreach. It was burdensome. It was, I mean.
And one of them, I think it was Kagan, used the term gerrymander, which generally we think of a gerrymander as drawing a congressional district to get a certain number of people from one party or the other in there to guarantee a seat. In this case, she meant just what you were saying. They created so many exceptions and exemptions in the law that it ended up completely targeting you guys and nobody else.
Yep.
And she referred to that as gerrymandering, and she says if that's true, that's serious.
Yep. I think that I could not hear one judge say anything positive for the other side. I mean, I went back and read the whole transcript this morning, of course, because there's so much going on I don't understand at the time, and they ask so many questions and interrupt. I mean, they don't really let the attorneys get their full thing out, because they, like you said, they already know, you know, everything about the case, and they have a million questions, and, bringing up other cases that set precedent. So it was just a lot going on that we left going, I think it sounded good. But,
well, you know, I think what happens is you know, they first off, all nine justices, no matter what their prejudice is, no matter who appointed them, they're all highly qualified. There's no question about that. They all understand
Smart
the
people.
Law very, very well. They do have some philosophical differences. There's no question about that. And the court, unfortunately, even though it's supposed to be apolitical, has become more political in recent years. But so they come in enormously well informed, and probably leaning heavily one way or the other. But they there may be a few kind of on the fence, and they want to give the attorneys a chance to say, okay, convince me. This is where I'm hung up. I can't get over this here. Give me something to hang my hat on. You know,
they wanted proof that a pregnancy clinic had ever been charged with false advertising, had ever hurt a woman. They
and
could not.
The answer was no.
None.
Yeah, and the state of California had to admit that, had to say, well, because the state has the power to charge you with fraud or you know, medical malpractice or whatever it is. They have, and in the history of all of the whether you call them pregnancy centers, life centers, et cetera, none. The state has never brought an action against you. That's pretty compelling. And the state was the one that they asked the question of, and the state said, well, actually, no, we never have charged them with anything.
And there, one justice said, well, there should be some kind of a trial where we can get real information. I mean, they just saw it was kind of all targeted and made up, and there was nothing to back it, and things we've been saying for 3 years.
Refreshing. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who a Sacramentan and a Catholic.
Yes.
He is
from our Holy Spirit parish.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's free, you know, frequently a what they call a swing vote, not just on life matters, but on just about everything. I've said a few times, well, they should just let Anthony Kennedy ask the questions and let Anthony vote, and then that's say, okay, that's it, because the other of us are going to be split 4-4. It happens a lot.
Were worried about him, and I think he is all for us.
Oh, I think there's any question. You know, the interesting thing about Kennedy, yes, he is a yes vote for keeping Roe v. Wade as the law of the land, but he's a no vote when it comes to late term abortion. He has gone the other way on late term abortion. He thinks that he thinks that should not be legal. And I mean, it's a foot in the door. You know, he's still wrong.
It's a foot in the door.
Yeah, and I've always he's a very reasoned, intelligent guy. And yesterday, all his questions were negative toward this law.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing that, you know, and they really didn't bring the abortion into it. But, you know, it was about free speech and compelled speech. And they said, you guys have made up a new category called professional speech.
Mm-hmm.
They questioned that. Like, what is that? I mean, it was, yeah, they didn't like what the California did. And David Chu, who wrote the law, was there, of course, at the rally screaming, you know, with Planned Parenthood. And I think he's hanging his head today, too.
Well, you know, it's just interesting because you say it wasn't about abortion, it's about free speech, and that's definitely what it is. And yet, the several of the justices know. I mean, they have been consistently a vote for abortion in all instances, et cetera. And they are. You could see them trying to somehow. I mean, obviously, compelled speech just shocks the conscience of anybody, liberals, conservatives, middle of the roaders, everybody. It shocks
America.
The conscience. This is just wrong. And yet you could see a couple of them who have been very saying, yeah, but I can't say it's about abortion, but it is. And I've got to somehow work my argument into leave abortion out of it, but work my argument into the state has the right to compel speech if it involves public health or something like that. In a very limited way, the state does have that right. I mean, the state does require a restaurant to post signs in the bathroom saying you must wash your hands, all workers must wash their hands, those sorts of things. And those have, you know, it's compelled speech, but you know, it's the law, and nobody seems to, the Supreme Court doesn't seem to have a problem with that kind of compelled speech. And they tried to link it to that kind of thing, and yet they just weren't successful.
We're just so happy. I mean,
I'm guessing 6-3, maybe 7-2 in favor of you guys.
And we thought it would be 5-4. We're worried about Kennedy, but I think it is going to go much better than we anticipated just by going back and rereading everything today. And God bless America. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, you know, I give myself too much credit for being fair, but I gotta think, let's say I was just ardently in favor of abortion, just thought this is the best thing in the world and it's liberated women and on and on and on, and I would just have to sit there and go, I can't vote for this. This is just wrong.
Yeah.
I disagree with what the Life Center does. I disagree with all these pro-lifers, you know, but they do have a right to say it. They do have a right to exist. That we can't force them to say something they don't want to say. You know, but once you start down that path, you know, they always say, be careful whose ox is being gored, because next time it'll be you. Next time it'll be something that you don't want to say, and the government will be forcing you to say it, you know. And,
you know,
you can't
one experience. When we were out on the sidewalk all night, we were sitting with a group of young, very pro-choice attorneys from Princeton who, of course, didn't like us, and they were for the other side. And we thought, okay, we're going to show them who has, you know, the love. We share, you know, we let them walk to our flat and use the bathroom instead of walking 7 blocks to the Union Station.
Mm-hmm.
We brought them food. We brought them coffee. We brought them a tarp to keep warm. The whole 20 hours, we were, like, ministering to these pro-choice people. and they sat in right in front of me, and every time they thought it was a zinger for the other side. And when they left, they never thanked us. They never, you know, thanks for the tarp and keeping us dry and getting us blankets. And it was just kind of sad, you know, that they disliked us so much. They couldn't really see us as people. It was really, that was one thing that, you know, we said we'll outlove them. We just hope what we had to say in Minnesota will have an effect on them.
Well, you know, there have been so many falsehoods spread about you guys. You know, you go out on the street and you rope people in and you indoctrinate them and brainwash them and tell them lies. And, you know, and it's the old expression, you tell a lie often enough, it becomes truth. You know, people start to believe it. I know when you talk to the 40 Days for Life people on the sidewalk, they encounter such hostility. You know, you're here to harass me. You're a hater. You're a this. They just don't. They've heard it so often that they believe it, and so they're looking at you as if you're this monster.
Yeah. It was, you know, quite amazing. And we agreed, you know, that we all wouldn't get into any talk about it or arguments, just you know, on the sidewalk with being there. But we really, really tried to, you know, do what we could to show them love and change their minds on we do care about women, and shared our personal stories, and it was nice.
Well, you know, if this is the kind of thing, obviously, if I were an attorney, you know, somebody came to me and said, the state of California needs help on this law here, and $40 an hour, forget that for being a placeholder. We're going to give you $400 an hour. and I didn't know anything about the case, and then looked at the case.
And even, again,
leave abortion out of it. I'd have to say, I can't pose an argument here. I cannot pose a winning argument here. There's just nothing to hang your hat on.
No, not one thing. And it was just so refreshing to see that in America, you know, our legal system, eventually you can be heard. If, you know, it was just like in California, how we just got beat down, and the governor signed, and then the Ninth Circuit, and we're just like, really? Our core belief, I mean, nobody hears us. They don't care. They just run over us. And it was really nice that in the end, the Constitution, you know, it's why we have it and don't want to change it. It's such a powerful document.
I'll share something from this piece by Amy Howe, who reports for SCOTUS, the SCOTUSblog.com. She says, Justice Anthony Kennedy also expressed doubts about the law. In one question, I thought this was the most compelling of everything. In one question that may prove to be pivotal in the case, he asked Ferris, one of the attorneys, what would happen if an unlicensed clinic wanted to put up a billboard that said only in large letters, choose life? So a great big billboard like you see in downtown Sacramento or out on I-80 or Highway 50. It just says choose life. Doesn't say anything else. He said, would that message trigger the law's notice requirement? Now you got to, you know, give this all this, give Planned Parenthood's number and everything else. Ferris, the attorney for the state, responded that the billboard would indeed have to disclose that the nonprofit does not provide medical services.
Yeah, 29 words.
And according to this report, it said Ferris's answer drew a sharp response from Kennedy, requiring the inclusion of a 29-word notice on a billboard that only displayed a two-word message seems to impose an undue burden on the nonprofit speech. And here are the key words that should suffice to invalidate the statute. So,
yeah, it's a burden.
Choose life. Even if you just put a picture of a baby on a billboard without a single word, you would have to print a message telling people where they can get an abortion. They might be able to get a free abortion. Here's the phone number. Here's the address.
Yeah.
People would think it was a Planned Parenthood ad.
Yeah. And it has to be in the same size font
exactly.
as the word Choose Life and in whatever languages in that county. Some counties up to 13 languages. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just so apparent they're just trying to, you know, shut down our message.
Yeah, exactly. And so that, yeah. I mean, there's no question Kennedy, well, there aren't going to be five votes against you, that's for sure.
Five to four
at a minimum, probably 6-3, maybe 7-2, should be 9-0, but that doesn't really matter. If it's 7-2 or 8-1 or 9-0, it sends a strong message to other states that don't even try to pass a law like this. Don't even try, because it's not going to go anywhere. And the last thing a legislator who gets a law passed wants to see happen is to have it declared unconstitutional, because it makes them look bad.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it look mm-hmm. like you didn't do your homework. So
yep.
5-4 decision is not quite as compelling. Then people can go, well, maybe if we word it a little differently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, no. It's just good news, Marie. Very good news.
Good news, not just for California, but for all states. So many things. And it was amazing. I didn't know. I learned a lot down here. There's prayer houses where people rent out their house for prayer groups to come pray for these cases.
Wow.
And there were people in these, you know, having these prayer meetings, just praying and praying that we would do well. It was quite, you know, quite amazing and moving. I'm like, wow, the whole country's just really behind us. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Well, good for you for going back. Good for you for.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have frostbite or anything?
No, I'm at the air. My flight doesn't leave for about 7 hours, but I decided to get here. The whole city's closed down. We couldn't even go to a museum, so I'm in here for the long haul.
Are flights being canceled?
Not here yet.
Not yet.
Well, so,
good for you for doing that. Safe journey home, and we'll look forward to talking to you when you get back.
Yeah, it was once in a lifetime. Thanks, Bob, for all your following it and reporting on it.
Well, it's good news.
It's been great.
Good news. We'll talk to you soon, Marie. God bless.
Okay.
Yeah.
God bless.
Take care. That's Marie Leatherby, Executive Director of the Sacramento Life Center. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. The Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store, located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, first communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop's Hour is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand. Thanks for everything you continue to do and have done throughout your life here in the Diocese of Sacramento and throughout the country. Bishop Wiegand was the Bishop of Salt Lake City. That was his first assignment as a bishop, and then he came to Sacramento and is now Bishop Emeritus. Well, a wonderful pilgrimage to Catholic Ireland taking place this summer. Karen, how do you pronounce your last name, Karen?
Chaplier.
Kepclear, very good. Is that an Irish name?
No, it's French. It's French. It means hat maker.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, everybody needs to wear a hat then.
Yes.
Karen, tell us about this pilgrimage.
Well, I'm pretty excited about this because I've been all over the world with different pilgrimages that I have organized since 2006. Mm-hmm. And I had never been to Ireland until last April, mm-hmm. when a friend of mine who lives there part-time said, Karen, come on over. We're going to plan a pilgrimage together. And that's what I did. We got in a car. We drove all through the beautiful countryside of Ireland. And we went to every single place that's on this pilgrimage. So I'm very excited to share that with others.
Very good. So the only time I was in Ireland, I got in our rented car, and the steering wheel was on the wrong side of the car.
You're right. It's funny because the first time I got into a car, I got in the driver's side, and I said, Barbara, where's the steering wheel?
I remember I was there. One of my college buddies and I, this was years ago, went to Ireland, you know, and he got in the car in what would be the driver's side, and I got in what would be the passenger side, and we sat there for about five minutes, and he said, "Are we going to go?" And I said, "Yeah. Why don't you start the car and start driving?" And he looks at me and he says, "The steering wheel is in front of you."
The first time we started driving, I brought my friend Sandy with us, and Barbara was driving. And after the first day, we both looked at each other and we said, "We would have been dead by now." This is especially the roundabouts.
It's honestly, I mean, you can laugh about it if you survive, but it's terrifying.
It is. It is. And because the roads are very, very narrow.
Very narrow.
Side, so you're like driving right next to all the plants and everything coming out from the side of the road.
Yep. Yeah, so many of the roads are like, when you get out in the countryside, are like little country roads. They're almost, in some areas, one lane, you know, and kind of the growth encroaching on the roadway. But it's charming.
It's charming, and there are no very, very few road signs.
Almost none.
Almost none. And so what I found when we were driving is the Irish are such kind and gentle and patient people, especially when these crazy Americans are driving up and we're so frustrated we can't figure out anything, and they're just so, so helpful.
Yeah, you come to a four-way kind of out in the country, and one road curves kind of to the right, and the other one curves kind of to the left. It's not like it just goes straight, and you go, I don't know, which way? Which way am I supposed to go here? And you have to ask somebody.
You do. And they're always very, very helpful.
Oh, yeah. They'll probably invite you in for lunch.
There was one woman who did invite us in for tea.
Yes.
But we ran out of time and we couldn't. I would have loved to have done that. But.
Yeah. So tell us about where this pilgrimage will go.
Okay. Well, this pilgrimage is based on Catholic Ireland. So, uh-huh. so many of the churches there are Anglican. And Barbara and I were really concerned with making sure that we help people understand the history of Catholic Ireland.
Now, you'll be just in the Republic of Ireland, not in Northern Ireland?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So we're going to start out in Dublin, which Dublin was founded by the Vikings almost 1,000 years ago. And it's a bustling, cosmopolitan, beautiful city. with lots and lots of things to see and do. But we are going to start out there, and one of the places we're going to go that I found to be really a lot of fun was the Guinness Storehouse. And that was the original brewery, the Guinness Brewery, and they've turned it into a marvelous museum with restaurants and tasting room and gift shop, and it is just a wonderful experience. So we're going to go there, and then we're going to go to see the Book of Kells. Are you familiar with that, Bob, the Book of Kells?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the ancient book of the four Gospels that are written in Latin, mm-hmm. that were taken out of Rome. They were snuck out of Rome and taken to the village of Kells, and then now they're on display at the Trinity College. So we're going to go there, and we're going to also go to the Kilmainham Jail, which is it was built in 1796, but what's interesting about this, it's the largest preserved Victorian jail in Europe. And it really, really starts to make the trip meaningful in terms of history. So then we go on to Glendalough. Mm-hmm. Glendalough is an early Christian site that was founded by St. Kevin in the 6th century. And there is a priest. His name is Father Thady Doyle. And he wrote a book on Glendalough and a pilgrim's walk through Glendalough. And he's going to take us on a prayer walk in the Valley of the Seven Churches. And Father Doyle has developed what's called Glendalough Chaplet, and that's based on the Divine Mercy Chaplet.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go to each sacred site, we'll pray this Glendalough Chaplet. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Okay.
And do you want me to just keep talking about the itinerary?
Yeah, that'd be great. We've got a couple more minutes.
Okay, all right. So then we're going to go to Kilkenny, and a lot of people, when they go to Kilkenny, which is a medieval city, go there for the castle, this mm-hmm. big refurbished castle. But we discovered the Black Abbey, mm-hmm. which was founded in 1225, and it's run by the Dominicans, and it's one of Ireland's oldest churches. And the official title of the Black Abbey is the Abbey of the Most Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it Black Abbey because of the black kappa that's worn by the Dominicans over their white habit.
Mm-hmm.
Then while we're in Kilkenny, we're also going to have the opportunity to go to St. Mary's Cathedral, which was built in 1843. And that has the relics of St. Victoria. Have you ever heard of St. Victoria?
Have heard of St. Victoria, but don't know a lot about St. Victoria.
Well, they don't know a lot about her. She had a twin sister, and she was martyred. And they have her relics there as well as a little vessel of her blood. So mm-hmm. We're going to be then going from Kilkenny, we're going to make our way to Knock.
Mm-hmm.
So Knock is the Ireland's National Marian Shrine.
Right. Very famous.
And very famous. And what's interesting is that in 1879, when 15 village people witnessed an apparition, it was a silence. There was no message.
Mm-hmm.
But what they witnessed was Our Lady, St. Joseph, St. John the Evangelist, an altar, a cross, in a lamb representing Jesus, and it was all surrounded by angels. So there was no, as I said, no particular message, but the idea is that we each find our own meaning mm-hmm. in what that is. There have been many, many miraculous cures attributed to prayer
Knock
Shrine.
Kieran, we're running short on time. Tell people how they can sign up for this. July 14th to the 23rd, leading from San Francisco.
Okay. They can sign up by calling me at Karen Chapelier at 916-652-7560. And I would be happy to talk to them about it.
Very good. Very good. Karen, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you have a very successful tour.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, Bob. And also, I wanted to just say one last thing.
Okay.
As Father Matthew Spencer said to say hello to you.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Thanks very much,
right,
Karen. Greatly appreciate it. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.